You've been listening to Mentoring Matters, Mentoring in Today's Business World with hosts Rainey Petrin and Dave Carson. If you have a question for Rainey, Dave, or their guests, please call us now at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now, back to Mentoring Matters.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to our show, Mentoring Matters. Today we are discussing some of the common challenges that mentoring program managers face. I'm Rainey Petrin, president and founder of Manager Mentors, along with my co-host Dave Carson from the UK. And we have a very special guest today, Amy Fardella, senior vice president of human resources for Marmax Corporation. Okay, Dave, you wanted to bring up a point following up on our last point in the last segment?
Yes, thanks, Rainey. Amy mentioned a lot of good points there in the previous segment. We were discussing mentors and mentorees joining mentoring programs, maybe for not the right reasons. And I just thought it'd be a good thing for the listeners, because there's probably somebody listening saying, well, how do you try and solve that issue before it even starts? And one of the things that we do, and I think it works pretty effectively in our programs, is to have some sort of criteria around the mentor and mentoree population. So, you know, people, it's open to everyone in the program if they meet that particular criteria. And I do think that helps to alleviate these problems of people joining programs for, say, political reasons. And the other point, Rene, you mentioned earlier on, was in closing the relationships. It's just so important. I mean, some commentators in the UK have only, in the past, I would say, 4 years or so, begun looking at closing the relationships. But I know for yourself, Rennie, there are sound psychological principles why we must close these relationships down. Otherwise, you know, things get carried on to the next relationships and they might not be so successful. So I thought I'd just bring these points to the listener.
Those are two good points, Dave. The other thing I would add to that, particularly on the first point you made, is one of the ways of trying to screen people is to do an interview. We recommend that not only do they fill out a profile form, but you actually conduct a brief 10 or 15 minute interview that allows you to be able to kind of get some sense as to how motivated the person is. And that's where you can probably get red flags initially that tell you that perhaps this person that you probably should not match with someone in the program. So that's another technique that people might use. Okay. One of the other issues, probably the most common one, and it's a challenge, I guess, and everybody has it, and don't know how Amy would respond to this, but, you know, which is how to get pairs to meet regularly.
Mm.
Because, you know, everybody, it's funny, I go into a company sometimes, and the company will tell me from the get-go, well, you know, we're kind of a unique company. I mean, you know, we're very busy, and we have a lot on our plates, so we're not sure.
Oh, they're the ones.
Right. You know, they're the ones. You know, nobody else is. And so they say, well, we're very unique that way. And so how do you get people to meet? It's like, well, first of all, everybody has the same challenge. Everybody's got, you know, so many things on their plate. And I think that when it comes to this particular challenge, the role of the program manager becomes critical because they really are the person that's supposed to keep people honest about doing that without necessarily micromanaging them. Because the problem can be you've got a program manager who's sitting there calling everybody every other week saying, are you meeting? And that's not really what you want the program manager to do. And also, they don't have time to do that anyway. Mm-hmm. But it is a sense of having the program manager who's there who, and people know is holding people accountable to meeting.
Right. And I would agree with you that the program manager is critical there, and we, of course, have had that issue from time to time. And it is, you know, typically people are very well-intentioned. They want to meet. They miss the person, et cetera, but stuff keeps coming up, and they aren't making the time. So the program manager, you know, just the fact that the program manager calls and checks in with each party, each of the two parties, from time to time, sort of hangs over both their heads in a positive way for us, so that they know that, geez, I haven't talked to my, you know, mentee or mentor in a while, should make that happen because there is mutual responsibility for making that happen. So that pushes it a little. And if it still doesn't happen, the program manager does, in fact, call and really pushes both parties to make it happen.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, again, if it continues, then we'll switch it up if we need to in terms of the partners, but that usually rectifies it.
Now, Amy, is there a secret that you have that nobody else has in the world that indicates how people can meet regularly?
No secret.
I get that all the
time. Lots of tips, you know, and best practices. I mean, if we hear that they say, well, you know, what we found is that we both travel, you know, to the same area of New York, for our markets are in the same area of New York, and it's this kind of funny area, it's not the typical 7th Avenue, et cetera. And we're often there on Tuesdays. We just make sure that, you know, whenever we know we're going to be there, to call the other one and say, hey, I'm going to be there, or you, do you want to meet for dinner? Or, you know, some sort of tips. We both are early people, so we make sure that we meet early in the day at 8 o'clock, and when a lot of other people aren't here, because the majority of people start at 9 in this company, and we get it out of the way that way. So if there are tips, we encourage, you know, we'll share them at the beginning of each orientation and as the new pairs are about to sit down and create their contract. But no, I have no magic secret. We'd all get rich if I had that. I'd let you guys in for a cut if I had that.
Good. That's very generous of you, Amy. I'll hold you to that when you get the magic.
Yeah, exactly.
But you're so right. I mean, I get that question all the time in training, and I'll say, well, you know, it depends on how you look at it. Some people do best if they plan a calendar for the year.
Yeah.
Some people do best, they bring their calendars at every meeting and then they plan the next meeting. I've had senior people who've said, the way it works for me is I've told my mentee to contact my administrative assistant and to put it on my calendar, and that way it gets done and I'm there and it's all set.
Yeah.
And if that works, that's what you try.
Yeah. We encourage them, to your point, excuse me,
No problem.
We do encourage them, and it was your tip way back when, to at the end of each meeting plan the next one. And that, in general, is useful for people.
Yeah.
Helpful.
It's amazing when you meet some people, you know, we'll go in and do quarterly sessions and we'll talk to some mentors and mentees and they'll say, well, you know, we haven't met in about 8 weeks, but it's going really well. And I respond, well, how can it be going well if you haven't met in two months, you know?
Right.
And again, what happens sometimes is neither party wants to make the other party look bad.
Right.
So they'll say, well, we haven't met, but it's going well, to kind of cover that. And,
right.
And it's really important. I talk about this in the training. I say, be careful of not colluding with one another with the issue of frequency of contact. Because,
right.
You know, you're busy and your mentee calls you and says, I've got something coming up and I can't meet. And your immediate response is relief because you couldn't meet anyway. They called you first, so the other ones were canceling about you. But you cancel instead of challenging that person, say, well, this is an important meeting that you and I are supposed to have. So can you make some other choices, or what can you do? Because we really want to make sure that we meet if at all possible.
Right.
Otherwise, two people just so easily collude, and then all of a sudden they're 3 months into it, and they haven't met at all, and they wonder what happened, kind of thing. That just kind of slips away.
Yep.
Dave, any insights from your end on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great to hear Amy saying, you know, got the tips and best practices. It's fantastic. There's a couple of things here I'd just like to mention. You know, when people sign up for a mentoring program, one of the things that sometimes comes up in terms of the mentors particularly is, what's my commitment to this program? And sometimes that can have a knock-on effect on frequency of meetings. But I think the other thing we do in the design process is to talk around what would be suitable for this organization in terms of how often do people want to meet and how long will the meetings last. And when that's worked out, suddenly everything's put into perspective, particularly over 9 months to a year, and it suddenly becomes more manageable. I think that's one thing, you know, we can help when we're creating mentoring programs. And the other thing is at the training, and this is a very subtle one, but it's really very powerful, and I think people should be made aware of it. All our diaries can be moved at a moment's notice, but I think when mentoring meetings are cancelled by either party on a regular basis, something very subtle happens, and it relates to the power balance in the mentoring relationship, and if it keeps going on, reputations can slide, I think, and that can be really detrimental to the program and also the individuals concerned. So I think in the training, people need to be made aware of these subtleties in the relationship.
Absolutely. And on that note, Dave, we need to take a break. When we come back, we'll have our last segment where we talk about common challenges in mentoring.